Let's open our Bibles this morning to 1 Samuel chapter 1. Many things in our world would be different if yes meant yes and no meant no. That's a basic teaching of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. He said his followers should embrace this simple reality without an oath. No reason to say, you know, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, or anything like that. No need for any of that. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you say you're going to do something, do it. If you say you're not going to do something, then don't do it. It's very, very simple. The world would not only be different, it would be better in most cases if people would just do that. Now, of course, our commitments must be guarded by the truth. For example, if a teenager says, I am going to beat the stuffing out of my little brother, then he should retract that and bless him instead. See, if he says, no, your yes should be yes. I said I'm going to do it, so I'm going to do it. I made a vow. I'm going to beat him. Well, then he should retract that and he should bless his brother instead. But when our commitment or our promise is rooted in and consistent with truth, we should do what we say we're going to do. We want God to keep his promises, right? I don't know. I mean, I do. I mean, we want God to keep his promises. And many of the great Old Testament prayers are simply the claiming of God's promises. If you read the prayers of Nehemiah and Ezra and some of the prophets, they simply say things like, you know, you said you would do this. So do this, please. God, in your mercy, hear us and do what you said you'd do. We want God to keep his promises and we want other people to keep their promises. But how well are we doing at keeping our promises to God and to others? This passage today in 1 Samuel is about worship and it's about God keeping his word and it's about us keeping our word. And this table that we're coming to here in a few moments is a good opportunity for us to reflect on these things and remember what we've committed to God and what he's committed to us and time to think on these things. Now, in our study last week, we ended with Hannah's pivot, I called it. She had been in despair and she worshiped God and she prayed and she made a promise to God and she was assured that God had heard her. And her countenance changed when she realized these things. And now I want us to see what happened next as we look at 1 Samuel chapter 1, starting in verse 19. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked for him from the Lord. Now the man, Elkanah, and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up. For she said to her husband, not until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. So Elkanah said to her husband, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word, or may the word of the Lord be established. Then the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bulls, one ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. And so they, or he, worshiped the Lord there. Now the first thing I want us to think about this morning is God's faithfulness. You'll notice the family had a long trip ahead of them. If you forgot this already, it was about a 15-mile walk to get back home. This wasn't a simple journey. And even though they had a long trip ahead of them, they started their day with worship. I like that about this text. They got up and they worshiped the Lord first thing. They didn't have their life completely together. This was a dysfunctional family. But at least they put first things first. And to the best of their ability, they were attempting to live in recognition of God's greatness. They were celebrating His goodness. They were submitting themselves to His authority. And so we like to say sometimes, they got themselves around. You know, you did that this morning. You got yourself around. You told yourself what to do. You got yourself out of bed. You dressed yourself, most of you. And you got yourself around, you know, and you got out here to worship. And then when they got home, they made love. That surprised you, didn't it, that I said that? Some of you are like, did he just really say that, or was that a slip? No, I said that. When they got home, they made love. We can't just ignore this in the text. That's what it says in verse 19. They worshiped the Lord, and then Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife. That's a euphemism for they went home and they made love. I'm certainly not suggesting this is a rule. Why not? Yeah. I'm not saying you can either. It's descriptive, not prescriptive, all right? I just think it's really interesting, and I don't want to walk away from this, that worship and lovemaking are in the same verse. It's really beautiful, I think. And there are some similarities, and this is not the time or the context for a full treatment of that subject, but the sanctity of sex in the right context in marriage should be noted here, I think, in this verse. And then this phrase, I can hardly read it without, the Lord remembered her. The Lord remembered her. Now, if you were thinking back to what she prayed, her prayer in verse 11 was, Lord, remember me and do not forget me. That phrase is actually used several times in prayers recorded in the scripture. If you read my blog this week, you know about that. But the word remember me means be mindful of me. Now, God is not forgetful like we are. I mean, are any of you at the stage of life where you walk into a room and you can't even remember why you went in there in the first place? So then you do something. Wow, a lot of you. Okay, I'm surprised you made it this morning. You're at church right now. Okay, we're under the word right now. But good. Good job for showing up. But God doesn't forget stuff like we do. The phrase just means, Lord, be mindful of me. It's personal. It's not just us. It's really personal. It's to me, it's evidence of a personal relationship with God. It's tender. It's intimate. And, you know, if you haven't experienced this yet in your life, this real closeness with God where you're saying, God, please be mindful of me, and you know that the Lord has been, if you haven't experienced that yet, please don't give up. Keep moving toward Him because He wants this for you. Be mindful of Him and ask Him to be mindful of you. And God remembered Hannah and she conceived. And 9 months later, she gave birth to a son. In this case, she named him, not the neighbor women. If you remember from Ruth. And she called him Samuel, which most likely means the Lord heard me. It's just so beautiful. You know, aren't answers to prayer wonderful? Have you seen some answers to prayer lately? I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, you just know God did it. I mean, there wasn't anywhere else for it to be done. It wasn't just fate. I mean, God really met you and met with you. And when you pray and you know that only God could do what needed to be done, and then He does it, it's just so wonderful. There's nothing quite like it. Knowing that the eternal God of the universe heard and answered. And sometimes He even blesses us with things we didn't pray about. Aren't you happy for that? You don't have to think of everything because He's thinking of everything. But we should thank Him and keep our eyes open. Now, the year passed quickly, and it was time for Elkanah to take his family back to Shiloh for their annual trip to worship, to sacrifice, to eat, and to rejoice before the Lord. And Hannah informed Elkanah that she would not be going this time. She said, I'm not going this time. I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to care for the baby. She said that when the child was weaned, that is, when he was beyond his immediate need for his mother's care, she would take him and she would offer him to the Lord, and she would leave him there forever. She had received him from the Lord, and she was committed to return him to the Lord. Her act of worship at that particular moment was preparing the young boy for a life of service. She was worshiping. She just wasn't doing it in Shiloh. She was worshiping the Lord by her actions with this baby boy. Now, the language here implies that Elkanah had become a participant in this vow. At the end of verse 21, it says his vow. That word is sort of emphasized. And that may mean his vow of annual worship, but it could also mean that they were united now in this vow. Especially in verse 23, where we read, "Do what seems best to you," and then this prayer, "May the Lord establish his word." Now, this is very interesting, and I had to be reminded of this myself this week in my study, but according to Numbers chapter 30, this, boy, and in this age, you're just not going to believe this, but a man could negate his wife's vow if he disagreed with it. It's 2024. I mean, seriously? Can you imagine reading that in any context other than church and not getting hit by something? I mean, it's unbelievable. And a man couldn't, if his wife came home and said, "Honey, we were at worship today and I made a vow," and he'd say, "I don't like it." "No, I annul it. I annul your vow." He could do that according to Numbers chapter 30. So it's really significant here that Elkanah did not negate this vow. I mean, he was saying, "Okay, you know what? If God grants you conception, I'm with you in this. We will give this child, this man child, we will give this child to the Lord. And we will give the man giving up his own son. A father giving up his son." Elkanah was synced up with Hannah in this. They were one. Obviously unified before the Lord on this matter. Samuel was going to go to the tabernacle when it was time. I think their vow here, united as one, is such a beautiful picture of a husband and wife together, unified with God, all of them one, three but one, one but three. The second half of verse 23, I think, should be an encouragement for all the moms who wonder if staying home and discipling little ones is actually worth it. And there's a lot of you in this church. You may look at other women your age, and they have careers, and they have ministry opportunities, and they have hobbies. Maybe they're running marathons. And you're home teaching a little boy Bible verses and vocabulary and how to use the bathroom. No, it doesn't go there. It goes here, you know. Take that however you want it. That's discipleship. And you wonder, is this really worth it? I mean, am I doing anything here? Well, wonder no more. Remember Hannah. Remember what Samuel did for Israel. And never doubt the importance of your ministry at home. It's real, and it matters. Baxendale said, "Perhaps the greatest work being done in Israel at that time was being done by Hannah with little Samuel." God was preparing to raise the bar spiritually in Israel, and he was using Hannah and ordinary means to that end. And this took time. It took years. Did you know that God's timing will try the saints? Oh man, he moves slow sometimes, doesn't he? I mean, he's eternal, so it's not slow to him. But when you're fixed in time, it just seems like God has taken an awful long time to get it done. But he's at work, often where we least expect it. He may be doing things right now in our nursery we don't even know about, raising up somebody right over there. Now, we talk about God's faithfulness to Hannah and providing this child, but let's also think about Hannah's faithfulness to God. God had been faithful to Hannah. She told him that if he would bless her with a man child, she would return that child to the Lord under a Nazarene vow. He would be the Lord's for life. So the time came that Samuel was weaned. In those days, historians suggest that Hebrew women nursed their children until they were 3 years old. We don't know that being weaned exclusively refers to nursing in this text. Some scholars suggest that weaning means not dependent upon maternal care. And some of you are probably thinking, yeah, well, they could be 25, you know, I mean. But verse 24 says the child was young, all right? So we do know that this was as a young child. I think our best guess is that he was 4 or 5 years old. You know, it's a good thing we don't know for sure because we would use it religiously. I mean, I think there's sometimes it's a little uncertain in the scripture about some things, and I think God did it that way so that we wouldn't say, oh, well, you know what, they did this to Samuel when he was 4, so we got to do it to every kid when he's 4. That's how we do stuff, humanly. But we don't know. He's just a little guy. We know that. Verse 24 says it was the time for the annual trip to Shiloh, and Hannah went this time, and they took sacrifices appropriate for the occasion. They took 3 bulls, 30 pounds of flour, a skin of wine, and the most important sacrifice, Samuel. I just, you know, I enter into these texts. I wonder if she gave him a little backpack with his stuffed animal, some fruit snacks. Yeah. One of those little juice boxes, pencil. Parents, you have to feel a little bit of emotion here, don't you? I mean, admittedly, there are times when you'd like to bring your 4 or 5 year old to the church and just drop them off. Don't. But on the other hand, some of you have a hard time putting your child in the nursery. I mean, just think about what's happening here. Think about this. They arrived in Shiloh. Their first act of worship was the butchering and offering of a bull. The second act of worship was offering a living sacrifice, Samuel. It says they brought the child to Eli. I just can't read that without feeling it. Now, you do know, perhaps, and if you don't, I'm going to tell you or remind you that they were not bringing him to Eli because Eli had done such a great job at parenting. He was really a bad dad in a lot of ways. They were bringing him to God because they promised to do so. He came from God, and they were giving him back to God. Now, parents, we may not have made a Nazirite vow, but I want to tell you something this morning that we must remember, and that is this, that all of our kids are God's kids. They're God's kids. They came from him, and they should be entrusted to him. I would tell my boys every once in a while, I'd say, you know, you're not mine. And they'd go, what? And I simply meant by that, you belong to God. You came from God, and I've given you back to God. You're not mine. You're not ours. God made you. God's creative right is upon you. If you've ever followed through on a big promise before the Lord, whether you're a parent or not, you have to just feel what's happening here in verse number 26. I prayed for this child, she says, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked of him, and I have given him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he will belong to the Lord. It's tempting to backtrack. You ever make a big vow to the Lord and go, now, why did I do that again? I think I was in a state of duress. You know, you're never supposed to make big decisions when you're under duress. So I think I'm going to have to. She made a commitment. This was an act of faith. She was entrusting Samuel to God, to his protection, to his provision, to his care. She knew that God could be a better parent to him than even she could be. Wow. She believed God was present. She believed that in the shadow of the Almighty there is safety. Oh, helicopter parents, take note! Now, verse 28, the last verse in this chapter, it ends in the New King James Version with, "So they worshiped the Lord there," and they sure did. We know that. But almost all of the other versions translate the word "he." He worshiped the Lord there. He, that is little Samuel, worshiped the Lord there. 4 or 5 years old, whatever he was, he worshiped the Lord. Never underestimate the power of a child to be able to worship. You know, we're not just putting the kids over there so we can worship, because they're so annoying. Now we're putting them over there so they can worship too. Never underestimate a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 3-year-old, for that matter, in their ability to worship. It's not always true, but it is often true that children learn what or who to worship from their parents. And honestly, it's not hard to figure out what we worship. What we prioritize is what we worship. Just note that, all right? What we prioritize is what we worship. And wow, is it ever hard to keep God a priority? It is. If you don't know how hard that is, then you've never had the battle in your heart. Tim Keller, I think it was Tim Keller who said this, "Our hearts are idle factories. We're just constantly producing new things to make a priority, to make the big deal. And it's just so easy to let lesser things, other humans, special events, hobbies, whatever, become an idol. I fight it every day. Maybe we've made commitments to God. You know, we're having one of those special moments with God. I call it a vertical moment, when God is good and great and worthy, and we say, "God, here's what I'm going to do." And then we get back to living in the horizontal really quick. And we say, "Well, I'll get to that later, God. I'm living in the real world right now." I think one reason that corporate worship and the Lord's table is so important is so that we can recommit ourselves to the big things, recommit ourselves to the vertical. It's kind of like checking our compass. Author Ann Ortland suggested that when we truly worship God and we're not just playing church, several things can happen. Idols get destroyed again when we're gathered here together. Promises to God get reaffirmed. Gratitude is practiced. I hope already today you've been saying thank you to God. The heart can be moved. Tears may actually flow when we're truly worshiping God. People get off their face and they look up to the face that is lifted up to them, reminding us in worship that life is more than the horizontal. We were made for the horizontal. We were made for all the, you know, the daily dues and the mundane sort of things. We were made for that, but we were made for the vertical too. And I tell you what, when the vertical happens, the horizontal looks and feels different. When you really get connected with God, when you really remember who God is, when you really worship God in spirit and in truth, it's amazing how the horizontal changes. That's why we're here. Maybe we didn't sing your songs today. Maybe we didn't read your favorite verses today. Maybe you don't like our style. But if you walk out of here today and you say, "Well, I didn't really get much out of worship today," I just want to give you a little reminder. We didn't come here to worship you today. When you come to church, the customer is not always right. That might be true in the store you go to, but not here. God is always right here. We're here to worship Him. And when we see him for who he is, that changes everything. We can even keep hard promises. Our yes can be yes, and our no can be no before the Lord our God. So this table, this is a time to reacclimate, to reorient, to remind ourselves of who the Lord is and our place in this universe. It's a time to remember God's faithfulness. It's a time to commit ourselves to him. We recognize the greatness of God in his power to deliver us from the penalty. We celebrate the goodness of God as we think about the love that motivated him to do this for us. We surrender ourselves to his good and gracious authority. We renew our commitment to come under his wing, not only for care, but in obedience to the Lord who has the words of life. So let's take the time while the elements are being served this morning to just think on these things.